Let's presume that a person is able to, and we'll look at how this works perhaps, but let's presume a person's able to attend to their disordered appetites. Okay, let's take a simple disordered appetite that we all have. We're all easily hurt. That's a disordered desire, in fact, because the reason that I get hurt will vary from person to person. Okay? So you get hurt because there's a disordered appetite. Because something happens and it hurts you, doesn't hurt someone else. Okay? We've got our own peculiar ways of being hurt, our own sensitivities. And as time goes on, you start to say, well, no, I'm starting to understand what that is. Because you observe that something happens which hurts you, but then you also observe, but that person has no idea that I've been hurt. It's pretty obvious that that person didn't mean to hurt me. They weren't acting maliciously, they didn't mean anything, it just happens to be the way that they are, but more to the point, it's the way that I am. I've got certain sensitivities, I get hurt in a certain way. And as the years go on, because it does take years, you start to identify this in yourself and start to realize, well, this is what happens in me when this happens. And this is the story of me. And when that happens, this is what I do. Because that disorder will lead to certain behavior on my part. I might lash out, okay, and become very impatient, say things that I shouldn't say, become very hurtful myself. Because once something touches something which is about myself deep within, we go into kind of a survival mode. We can become like ostriches, put our heads in the sand, or we can come out fighting, all sorts of things. So we identify, we can begin to say, I've got a certain behavior in certain instances, which is linked with a certain feeling which happens within me, and that's then linked to a certain reason behind it, and I can begin to see it taps into certain appetites which are disordered, okay? And those disordered appetites can lead to disordered desires also, and all sorts of other things which flow out. And I can say, well, it shouldn't be like this, and I can begin to work at it. And first of all say, well, I'll start to try to block the behavior that happens as a consequence of my hurt. I'll simply start to feel it. And then I'll also start to think about it and talk to myself and say, this isn't really what's happening. Okay? So you go through different things. You've got the self-talk where you start trying to tell yourself the truth. And you've also got the addressing of the behavior. That's the willers also. And many other things that happen. And then you start to be attentive to the fact that this makes me think no one loves me. And I start looking into my memory, and there are all sorts of memories, but I am loved all the time. And so I start then to promote another kind of memory as well. Because notice when I'm hurt, certain memories come into play, and I do all those things in those areas. And as time moves on, things start to fall into place. Okay? And as time moves on, basically, I can work at things in different ways, and this weekend isn't about that, because it's a bit late to start on this part of the story, because we won't have time. You can start to get things right. In the spiritual life, you never really gave yourself to things of God, but start working on it, and God will begin to have a place in your life. Okay? And in so many areas of our lives, we can put in effort, and we can become better people. Okay? And that's, I think, would be the story for most of you, even though you might be acutely aware of where your disordered appetites are. To a large extent, we're able to work in such a way that we do create for ourselves a certain normality, don't we? It is in some way of our own making, because no one else can make it for you, because you're the kind of person you are. And what comes for you to be a virtuous normality, in fact, is somehow determined, it's really determined by the kind of person you are. Some things are naturally in place. There are some people who never shout, they never get angry, they're not inclined to that, unless they're suppressing something, then something will blow up one day. But there are some people who are naturally gentle in nature. There are others who are more volatile in nature. I was talking to someone yesterday, and they were talking about being passionate. But you're not a passionate person. So don't be concerned that you're not passionate, because it's not your character. Okay? Someone could also say, you know, I don't really ever feel like being angry, but that's not your character. So you don't worry about it. We've all got different kinds of dispositions, and according to the dispositions we've got will determine the way we are, the way we feel, the way we think, but it will also determine what we have to do to as it were, begin to perfect ourselves. Now, a large part of what I was looking at yesterday was about this perfecting of ourselves, because we identify where the disorder is, and we indeed can work at it to a large extent and put things in place so that we can get to the point in life where life simply goes quite well. You know, there always will be some difficulties, but my life's kind of in order and it's fine. I want to begin today by reflecting upon what's happened and what this state is. Very often for such a person, if that position also involves prayer, relationship with God, a fundamental spiritual life, which is love of God, there's a requisite care for other people, which is love of neighbour, and basically their life is in some kind of order, it's almost as if all the things in the command which the Lord gave us is there. Love God, love your neighbour, and love yourself, and everything's fine. John of the Cross would say, or also Saint Teresa would ask a question. Are you pleased with where you are? Are you happy? Are you content with the situation that you're in? And if the answer is, yes, I am, Saint Teresa would say, well, then you are a long way from God. Because all you've done is manufacture something which suits you. I'll give you another example which St. Teresa gives, and then we'll go back to St. John of the Cross, when she writes about poverty. And she wrote a letter to one of the Carmels. And in the beginnings of our order, as was the beginnings here in Australia, we never finished up. We've never built our monastery here because we ran out of money. We got halfway through building the church and we had to stop because we had no money to go on, that chapel over there. So always the tradition of our order, whenever the order's founded, there's always great difficulties wherever it goes. And this Carmel was founded in great difficulty. And after they were established, they were renowned to be a great prayerful Carmel. But there were evenings when there was no food. They didn't have the money to buy it. And if people didn't bring them food, there was nothing to eat, so that they could go hungry for a night. And this was known, and Teresa knows about this. And I think this is also the Carmel that was left some money in a will, and the sisters were in a bit of a turmoil. What are we going to do with this money? We just give it to the poor. And St. Teresa writes to them and tells them, don't give it away, put it in the bank. Because at least with the interest, you'll be able to buy something to eat, and you won't be worried about whether you're going to have something to eat, and that's going to interrupt your prayer life. But she said, but more importantly, I've got something else to say to you, she says. I hear about your poverty. You're very poor. And this poverty of yours is commendable, she said. But I also hear that you know that you're poor, and therefore I'm telling you, you have no poverty at all. Because that's not the poverty of the order, she said. Because you feel pleased about being poor. It's awful, isn't it? I'm telling you, you're not living poverty. Full stop. Imagine receiving that letter. But let's get behind what's happening. It happens to all of us. Well, maybe not to you, but certainly to me. You can live well and do things well and things are going well, and you start to feel, what's happened there? What's happening is you're building up a very refined ego. And it's becoming more and more and more refined. And if you add to that asceticism and penances, you're creating a refined ascetical ego, which John and Teresa would say has nothing to do with God. But don't worry, because you have to go through this anyway. That's the way the path goes. But it's important to know what happens as you go through that. Now, how do you identify that that really is the case? For that, I won't refer to St. John of the Cross, but again to St. Teresa, because each of them has their different strengths. And you'll find this in the third Mansions of the Interior Castles, which has only got two chapters. In the first chapter, she says, I'm speaking about the soul or the person whose spiritual life is nicely in order. They pray well, everything is fine. And then either something goes wrong in their spiritual life or they get a sense that I'm going nowhere. And then they start to worry. St. Teresa says, why do you worry? Is your spiritual life about becoming more spiritual? Because if it is, it has nothing to do with God. It's about you becoming more spiritual. And if you are going nowhere, what does that matter, so long as you've got God? And she says, you don't have humility. Okay, but let's put that one aside and then take another one. A person who largely has attended to, through all the things which we haven't looked at properly, but we won't be able to, we don't have the time, has been able to order their appetites. And it seems that, yes, you know, I've got it together, I live a good life, people say these things and I don't react and I'm patient, I'm all these kind of things, and it's great. And then suddenly, tomorrow, something happens so silly and I lose it. And what happens? I go into a despair. Or, in Teresa's terms, kind of a depression. And think, what's happened? What's gone wrong? What's happened to me? And St. Teresa would say, oh, humility, humility. I think humility is lacking here. Because you see, what happens as we start to order things, our life comes into order. Which is a path we have to follow. But let's begin to see what else is happening. While something is being ordered, something is growing. And it's a big head. It's what's growing. I start to think, I'm not too bad, actually. And all the people say, gosh, Father Greg, you give such good homilies, you're such a holy person. And I start to believe that. Because nothing seems to be going wrong in my life in particular. And I see everyone else around who has their life is falling to pieces. And I'm happily going along. Now, this has to happen. There's no way forward without this happening in some manner or form. But notice what's happening. As I put something in place, because I'm human, something else is going wrong, but I don't realize it. Because what's going wrong, I don't identify as wrong, but what's going wrong is something is being built up in me. And it's false. It's not real. There is this refined self that's starting to take its place within me. And to a certain real extent, we could say, well, that's good. That's what the government wants to happen to everybody. That's what most philosophical, ethical people want to have for everybody. That everyone becomes like that. They've got their life in order, they're good God-fearing people, they look after each other, they've got all these things in place. But John's perspective is the definition of a human being that I gave to you on Friday night, which is that one which is open to God, to be, as we saw last night, to come into union with God. And the purpose of life is not that I can sit back and say, oh, you've done well, you can rest now. Jesus says, fool, this very night a claim will be made on your life. It's what that's about, that parable, really. It's not that you worked hard and you got plenty of money in the bank. Jesus is not writing such trite things, but you've worked hard and you've got it. And there's nothing else to do because everything's fine. That's not what life's about, John says. Because really what you've now got is you've built up a horrible falsehood. Now, don't be too upset, because John will say, but this is what has to happen. Because the active nights, for those of you who know John of the Cross, where basically those part of the spiritual life where I have to do work, where I have to do something. And even if I can achieve, or God can achieve through my actions, what has to be done in this part of the spiritual life, what will necessarily happen as a consequence is, my experience of all this is I have. And it all revolves around the I that's doing it. And that can't be avoided because I have to work at this. Okay? So that's the starting point where I want to begin this morning. Have you got where we are? Okay. What do you think has to happen at this point? Given the way John understands what it is to be human. Yeah, unexpected. But what? 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 Just. What's that?
Possibly something in a person's life that causes them to question themselves.
Yes. Yes, but something quite simple.
A crisis,
which means what's going to happen? This edifice is going to collapse. The great thing about St. John of the Cross is it seems so sensible. It's a bit like if you've been reading the Office of Readings. We've recently had readings from the Book of Daniel, and we had that dream of not Nebuchadnezzar, the king that came, whatever his name is. No, it was a dream of Nebuchadnezzar. It was at the beginning of the Book of Daniel, where there's this big statue, and it's built on clay feet, falsehood. It has to collapse. It's a great image of what happens. We work, yes, and something's built up, but it's on clay feet. It has to collapse. So at a certain point in the human life, in the spiritual life more to the point, there needs to be a collapse. It has to fall down. Now, what's the experience of this crisis as it falls down? Devastation, sadness, loss, emptiness, lack of interest, I don't want to do things are not the way they are, all these kind of things, emptiness, don't want to get up out of bed, have no joy in anything that I do, don't want to meet people, don't feel like working. Does that sound like anything that you've come across before?
Yeah.
It's a funny thing, isn't it? There's a very interesting thing which happens. At this point of the spiritual life, there's a certain experience which is very much like another kind of experience which people can have, which is called depression. But I'm giving you the experience from the spiritual perspective first, because we need to look at them both. Because the experience from the spiritual perspective, we can see what's happening. Something's happening. Something's going to be broken down. Now, when a person suffers depression, what do they want? What is it that, you know, whether you've suffered depression or simply a mild degree, John of the Cross calls depression melancholia. But let's just say a mild degree of melancholia, just one of these kind of mood swings you go through. When you have a mood swing, or even a depressive time, what are you looking for? What are you hoping for? That it will lift, which means you want what?
Freedom.
But what are you hoping for?
Peace of mind.
Peace of mind.
Self-esteem.
I always want simple answers. You're giving me all these highfalutin answers. You just want things to go back to normal, don't you? how do you know that you're no longer depressed or in a mood? Not because it's gone, because things are back to what they should be, isn't it? When you go through a mood swing, you're experiencing it, but you've got a sense, but it should be this way. Okay? And for people who go through mood swings, what I often tell them is you need to remember in your mood that you won't always be like this because you have come through every other time. And what helps people in that is simply that sense, but this is part of what it is to be me. That's when it's not of God, when it simply is something human. This is part of what it is to be me, and I won't always be like this because it's happened before. And start to, in fact, own what's happening and start to, have a sense of where it's going and what's going to happen. Okay, because when a person has a depression or a mood swing, one thing is always there before them, and that is what they see as normality, what I can go back to. Okay? So you've got a certain experience, but there's a way out of it towards what we would call normality. And you've also got, in depression, a cause. And the cause is certainly something psychosomatic, biochemical. It's something contained within yourself. Okay, something happens and it triggers, which is precisely why depression can somehow be treated by drugs, with drugs. Okay, it points to the fact that it does have some endogenous cause. Hope I'm using that word correctly, because I'm not an expert in these things. And because there's a cause, you can treat it with something and you can recognize when it's gone, because there's an outcome which you're aiming at. So you've got an experience, there is a cause, and you're aiming at something. What John writes about as an essential moment in the spiritual life has a different cause and it has a different outcome, even though the experience might be similar. Okay, so when it's something which is about a mood or a depression or something like that, you've got a cause, yes, but you're aiming to put things back to a certain way. In this moment, which is a passive night in the spiritual sense, it is completely different. Even though in its experience it might seem the same, but even in the experience there is some difference as well. Let's, before we look at the difference in the experience, look at the differences in the beginnings and the ends before we go on. The difference in the beginning is God is doing it. Very simply put.
There's times, and even with myself and probably a lot of other people, look, we're depressed, or we're down. I think a lot of times we do, but then there's those times where we don't know why.
Yeah, but it's something, it's not caused by God. It's caused by something within yourself, and it's about your own character. Some people basically, there are some people who will regularly go through mood swings. Every so many weeks it comes again. And they don't know why, but sure enough, it's about time and it comes again. And that's got something to do with their humanness, and it can be... It can't be got rid of necessarily, but it can be treated in some way. Can it be got rid of? I don't know. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a psychiatrist. I'm not a psychologist. And I dare not comment because I don't know. Yeah. But when it's of this other thing, which we speak of as a passive night, what's causing it? The cause of it is the love of God. It's a different kind of thing. It's part of what I began saying last night is faith brings darkness to the intellect. As I come closer to God, the light of God will do what?
Guide,
yes, it will come along and it will put to sleep in its own way my faculties. The appetites which used to be there will no longer operate in the same way. because God is coming along and being present. But what does it feel like? I have no interest. I'm empty. It's kind of, but something else is happening. It's a different kind of thing because it's a different cause. One is a natural thing and it's a passing thing. Another is God is doing something. And what God is doing is, those of you, again, to turn to St. Teresa, you know St. Teresa's writings, she will begin to speak about this, I suppose, in the Fifth Mansions, when she speaks about the prayer of quiet and so on, where, and the prayer of recollection, when suddenly all of the faculties are stilled, almost as if they've gone to sleep. Okay? That's a nice way of looking at the moment of prayer. But in at what that means in terms of ordinary life is they don't operate the same way as they used to. You used to survive in the past by going shopping when you started, but now you have no interest in it. So you can't survive by that anymore. What happens? Okay? Thank God I never survived by going shopping. Otherwise it would have been difficult becoming a Carmelite. I survived by other things which made things difficult too. Like simple things like eating rice, and I had no rice for almost a year. Different things, but you know, you've got these things that, and they're there, but suddenly what happens, God, as it were, turns them off. And when they're turned off, you don't, the experience is, I have no interest. Okay, I don't want to anymore. Now there are two things that can cause that. One is the natural things that happen in moods. And the other thing is it's because God is coming closer to you. Okay, but we need to look and see to begin to distinguish between the two. But just trying to point out what's happening in the cause. The cause is quite different. One is kind of a swing in what's happening there, but one is, in fact, something else is happening to them.
Can both be happening at the same time?
I don't know. That I don't know, because I, as I said, I'm not a psychologist or a doctor. I think in principle there's no reason why they shouldn't be happening at the same time, but whereas a mood will change, this entrance of God into your life will be something which would more than likely be more constant. But as we'll see in a moment, the experience will be different because something else will be happening. But we'll come to that in a minute. What's the difference in terms of the outcome, in terms of what you might say is a prognosis? What's the difference in the hoped-for result? In a depression, the hoped-for result is things go back to what they were. No, it's a very different thing. I think at the moment, just kind of listen to me through, and because I can't give you everything, and unfortunately we're not angels, so I have to give you things in points. As St. Thomas Aquinas says, for an angel understands everything in one word. For us, we're not like that. You have to have many words, so we'll have to get through all the words and hope that they fit together. The prognosis is different, because what's happening in terms of what I'm trying to describe to you in the spiritual life is this false edifice has to be destroyed. Therefore, it can't come back. That's the big difference. When it's a mood or a depression, it's not about God coming in and destroying an artificially constructed edifice of self. That hasn't happened. In fact, you needn't be virtuous or anything, or you needn't even have any interest in God. Okay? And so what's hoped for, you go and see a doctor, and the doctor's going to try to put something back in place. If you're going through a passive night and come to see a spiritual doctor, don't know where you'll find one of them, but he will say to you, God's doing something here, and the outcome will not be what was. Okay? It's going to be something different. Now, what is the outcome going to be? It's where we finished last night. Union with God. Now, those of you who have dipped into recently the first book of the Ascent of Mount Carmel will remember in about chapter 3 or 4, John of the Cross says, quoting from the scripture which says, you cannot serve both God and wealth. He says, what's really being said there is, either God dwells within you or God doesn't. I mean, in the sense of filling you. God always dwells there. And in terms of your freedom and your capacity, it's either God or it's not God. It can't be God and something else. Again, we looked at last night, or yesterday afternoon, whether it's a thread of silk or an iron chain, the bird can't fly. It doesn't matter what it is. Now, we cannot bring about ourselves the person which is simply for God and about God, because we can't do it. Which is why St. Therese, in writing about love, it's on this point, in fact, even though it mightn't seem to be on this point, when she said, I despaired at the thought of trying to love. Why did she despair? Because I don't have any love with which to love. The love I've got is so little. It's like a drop of water in all the oceans of the world. And she said, but then you gave me the answer. I asked you to give me your love so that I could love with real love.